The divine romance is something that has started for each of us from the moment we were born. Because when we are born, we are already looking for love. And as we come out into the world, we connect immediately with the mother, our mother, who is a representative of the divine mother. And we become physically and emotionally attached to her. Well, from the moment that we're born looking for love, I think our entire life, we are seeking the divine romance. We're seeking romance. I mean, is there ever a stage in our lives where we're not looking for love? Even once we find our life partner, once we have our own children, there's still a part of us that wants the romance, And so maybe we read romance novels, look at romances on video, on the internet, but there is a longing in our soul that will never stop our whole life up until the time that we leave this world and go on with our evolution. We are looking for that divine love. And there's a very important reason why that is. And that is because creation itself is made because of love. It's because God himself, herself, is love, and had the desireless desire to share that love, because love cries out to be shared, to share that love with a multitude, an infinite multitude of creatures. And so our souls were born from that love, and with that love in our hearts. One thing that is sometimes called is God's Lila, the great play, the great drama of life. But God's Lila is the divine romance. And we are all actors in that. And now that we are consciously on the spiritual path and practicing Kriya, we have not only the desire, but also the tools to be able to engage fully in that divine romance. One of Master's chants, perhaps you do it sometimes, is spirit and nature dancing together, victory to spirit, victory to nature. Do you do that chant? Radha, 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 Govinda Jaya, Radha, Radha, spirit and nature dancing together, victory to spirit and victory to nature. This is the divine romance, spirit and a spirit, God, infinite, beyond creation and nature, everything within creation, and each one of us, a soul within that creation. We are the Atman, and we are looking for and to go back to and have a relationship with the Paramatman. Now, our lives and our whole evolution, which we know goes on and on through many, many incarnations, is a training ground in order to discover and to become worthy and to become capable of experiencing the divine love. And that training ground includes our relationship, our human relationships. One thing that Master said, which I have always found very interesting, actually two things. He has said, and I'm going to quote, "You can never imagine that you can win God's love if you cannot win the love of your fellow creatures." So think about that. I mean, we will not be worthy or able to receive and exchange divine love until we can win the love of our fellow creatures. So let's take a look at our human relationships and see how we can elevate each one of them to bring them to perfection. We want to perfect. Master said the other thing is we need to perfect one human relationship before we can find God's love. So keeping that in mind, and perfection is a mighty big, you know, term, but let's see how we can move towards perfection in our human relationships. So let's start with our family. You know, as children, we had a love of the parent, you know, so the mother, the all loving, compassionate, the father, perhaps, you know, more, what should I say, more wise, more rational. And being a good child is something I think that we don't learn until we are very far along in a human life. Perhaps not until we have our own children, or not until our parents change their role and begin to have need of us. But what we can learn from our relationship, especially with the mother, but very often with the father, depending on the qualities of the father, is what unconditional love means. Master says that the love that a mother has for the child is closest to the unconditional love that God has for each of his children. Because a mother will continue to love a child even when the child is naughty, even when the child is bad, even if the child really turns bad or evil, there is still something within a mother's love that continues to accept that child. Now, obviously, not all mothers manifest or express that degree of love, but yet, it's there, it's planted in the heart of every mother, at least the ability to unconditionally love the child. And this is how God loves every one of us. And it's something to keep in mind, because we sometimes think that we are so naughty or so undisciplined, or so much not following our spiritual techniques, that we're afraid to stand before God, that God is going to berate us or judge us for that. But that is not the case. One of Master's prayers, perhaps you say it sometimes, is, "Divine Mother, naughty or good, I am your child." So to recall, or if you are a mother or a father, if you are a parent, to try to find that seed of unconditional love, which God has planted in your heart, and to develop that both for your mother, excuse me, for your parent, and for your children. Now, let's look for a moment at the relationship between the parent and child. I have a feeling that some of you, maybe half of you, are parents. How can we relate in an elevated way to our children? Now, we have this aspect of unconditional love to be developed. Now, what keeps us from unconditional love, especially in the family, is a sense of possessiveness, that these are my children. Now, to the point where we have very justified duties, responsibilities towards the children, we do not have permission to own those children. Each soul that is born has their own destiny, has their own karma, has their own future. And one aspect of being a parent is to respect that, to find it, to help the child discover that, and to educate the child so that he or she is independent, can stand on their own, so that they're not just going from the security of the nuclear family into a family that they will create. That along the way, they have become their own person, and that they have become capable and independent. What does that mean practically? You know, your sons should learn how to cook and do the laundry. And so that, I don't know how it is in Singapore and in Indian culture and in Chinese culture, but I'll tell you that in Italy, the boys tend to stay at home as long as possible. It's not unusual to find a boy at the age of 30 or 35 still living with the parents. But I mean, I found this hard to believe. Maybe you don't. But even when that boy gets married, he brings home his wash to the mother so that she can do his wash once a week, and will often every day go back to mother for lunch. Okay, so we don't want to raise our children in such a way that they are attached to us or that we are attached to them. I don't know if you are familiar with a book, it's a book of poetry called The Prophet by the Lebanese poet Khalil Gibran or Gibran. And if you have not read that book, I recommend it. Again, the name of the book is The Prophet, and the author's last name is Gibran, G-I-B-R-A-N. And in that book, every chapter is a very short question on the part of a disciple to his spiritual master. And what I'm going to quote is from the chapter where somebody says, "Master, please speak to us of children." And what the prophet answers is, "Remember that the children are not yours. They were not sent to you, but through you." So please just think about that a moment, those of you who have children, even children who are well grown and married. Okay, the children are not yours. They didn't come to you, you know, even though they were born in your family, but through you. And then he says, you know, like the archer sends arrows out, you should send your children out to their own destiny. So there's a lot of work to do, isn't there, for us as children of our parents and us as parents of our children to improve and move towards perfection. Okay? So that there is not dependence, but independence, that there is not love, which is conditioned on what they are doing for us or we are doing for them, expectations of how they should act and what they should do in the present and for their future. But that unconditional love, unconditional means no strings attached. And as we move towards that ideal, we are preparing ourselves for the divine romance. Now, we have a relationship with our beloved, with our spouse, or what we sometimes call our significant other person. And this is a bit of a tricky relationship, because unconditional love is very difficult, very challenging to develop within that kind of a love relationship. There's so many things that enter into it. One is sexual attraction and sexual fulfillment. And with that, a lot of expectation and a lot of ego. And yet, within a relationship with a beloved, there is a marvelous opportunity to develop unconditional, pure love. When we see the other person as an expression of the divine, in the Indian marriage ceremony, one of the early parts of it is the placing of the flower garland on the other person. Now, I don't know if it's even remembered today, the meaning of that part of the ritual. And the meaning is, as we would put a garland on a divinity, on a statue of God, or as you have there right now, you have garlands around the photos of the masters. So at the beginning of a marriage, the placing of the garland on the other, which is to say, I see and will continue to see God within you. My husband and I did that little ceremony before we went into the temple. Our garlands were not the garlands that you have in these big important ones. They were garlands that we made out of the wildflowers that were in the field. It was in springtime. And we have been, I must say, very, very, very happily married and in love for the last 47 or 48 years. Yeah. And every day is wonderful. You know, every day is just, you know, new for us. And over the years, of course, our relationship has developed into one that is based in, it always was, but more and more in God, in the love of God, in Guru, and a very deep friendship, a companionship. But seeing, always seeing that God can and will speak through the other person. You know, there's at least my tendency is that when my husband says something, you know, maybe not to give it full value. And I think it's the same when I say something to him. But I have noticed over the decades how very right he is. Just amazing. When he says something, which is not often, But when he offers an insight, an opinion, or a suggestion, he's always right. I'll give you a very banal example. The road between where we live at Ananda and one of the closest towns is a road that has many sharp curves. And it's not a road that's very well kept. So one day I was going out early, very early in the morning, and my husband said to me, drive carefully, especially around the curves. And, you know, my first thought was, oh yeah, sure. But then I remembered, you know, how right he often is. And that very day on one of the most dangerous curves, there was a huge truck coming up the other way. And I was very cautiously going into that curve. I could have had an accident if I was driving as I normally do. Anyway, listening to those who are close to us and to whom we have entrusted our love and our friendship. You know, marriage, many people think, oh, the romance is gone. You know, speaking of romance, perhaps you yourself have been in this situation or know of people who have, but, you know, maybe after 10 years or 15 or 20, you just look at each other and say, where's the romance? And go looking for romance somewhere else. Well, the old definition of romance really has to evolve. You know, evolve from human, you know, romance and attraction into the divine romance. Master, in this chapter, I believe, have you all read it already, or you're about to read? He mentions at least three situations in which couples, saying that he admires these three different couples for the divine quality of their love. And one is Amalita Galikurchi, who was one of his great disciples and a very famous lyric soprano singer, and her husband. And he mentions two other situations. So we can move towards perfection. Again, if we can see and respond to the God in others. There's that one little moment in Swami Kriyananda's book, The Path, where one of the disciples said to Master one day, oh Master, every time I see you, I only see Divine Mother. Do you remember what Master answered? Does anybody remember? Master said, well then, act accordingly. Do you understand? Okay. So, you know, it's not just seeing the divine in your beloved, but acting accordingly, giving the same respect that you give to God and you give to the gurus. I'm going to move on here to the most important relationship that Master mentions. And that is friendship. This is a quotation from that chapter. The relationship that exists between friends is the grandest of human loves. Friendly love is pure because it is without compulsion. One freely chooses to love his friends. So I'm going to say just two things about this. Master talks and has written one or two beautiful poems. Please look for it in Whispers from Eternity, about friendship, about two souls walking together. In your satsang, the people that are with you right now, the people that you see on your screen, these are your deepest friends. These are your guru bhais. And with these people, you have the opportunity to develop that quality of friendship that Master says is without compulsion, and which is pure, which is thinking of the well-being of the other person, which is not asking in return for service given. So please consider the satsang that you have is as one of the most important training grounds for your divine romance, for your ability to be able to return God's love in the way that he is loving you. The last relationship that Master mentions, and I'd like to highlight, is the relationship between the master and the disciple, which is something that all of us want to spend more attention, more care, more time in deepening. I mean, it's not enough to have a master. What we want to do is to develop that relationship into one of pure divine love. This is what Master says in the chapter that you have or will be reading. The relationship between guru and disciples is the greatest expression of love in friendship. It is unconditional divine friendship based on a shared singular goal, the desire to love God above all else. The disciple bears his soul to the master, and the master bears his heart to the disciple. There is nothing hidden between them. Even in other noble forms of friendship, there is sometimes diplomacy. But the friendship of the guru-disciple relationship is taintless. So this is the relationship that you want to give your heart to, your time, and to develop your satsang of spiritual brothers and sisters, of friends, and that relationship, which can be taintless. The masters want nothing of us. The masters expect nothing of us. Remember when Master ran away to the Himalayas from Sri Yukteswar's ashram? You know, it seemed like he was gone for a few days. Do you remember that chapter? Well, he wasn't. He was gone for months. I mean, think about that. There's Master living in his guru's ashram, receiving his guru's love, his guru's discipline. And all of a sudden, he takes off to the Himalayas and he's gone for months. And then Master writes in the autobiography, when he comes back, it was like he hadn't been gone at all. Sri Yukteswar just picked up where they had left off, and there was no judgment at all in that. So let's accept and receive that kind of friendship, the unconditional friend, and deepen our relationship so that Master is truly the friend who is accompanying us every day in everything, not just when we pray and chant and do our kriyas, but all through the day in everything that we do. That Master, one of the masters, you can change every day, you know, is our constant companion. And finally, our soul is ready for the divine romance. And that's the relationship where it all started, of our soul with the spirit, that reunion, that meeting again of the individual and the infinite. And I'll close with this quotation again from that chapter. The greatest love you can experience is in communion with God in meditation. The love between soul and spirit is the perfect love, the love you are all seeking. When you meditate, love grows. It is God who is playing hide and seek in the corridors of hearts, that perchance behind lesser human loves, you may find his all-satisfying love. So this is the divine romance. It's present there in all of our relationships throughout life, becoming more and more pure, more and more perfected, less conditional, until we exalt that relationship with the Guru. And from there, he delivers us into the hands of the Spirit with our highest divine relationship, our true divine romance. So this is my wish for all of you, for myself, for all devotees, for all beings, that we may grow and deepen in that pure love and merge ourselves back into the divine romance where it all started and where it will all end in a blaze of bliss. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.